When I registered myself for the lottery, I happened to throw his name in there too.
Without him knowing?
And didn't tell him.
Oh, no, wow. Really?
Yeah, I told him the morning of the lottery.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay, James, how many pair of shoes do you have?
Well, right now I have probably 30 pairs of running shoes.
Oh, my.
Thanks for joining Trail Runner Nation. I'm Scott Ward.
I'm Don Freeman.
And we would like to welcome you to this new edition of Trail Runner Nation. Please, if you haven't already done so, go and look at our website, our Trail Runner Ninja Tim has created for us. It's at trailrunnernation.com. It's actually a really cool website that you can connect with your fellow trail runners. You can chat with them. You can look at all the different social media aspects and other tools that we have for trail runners.
We have tonight James Barstad's with us. He's an ultra runner, 67 races posted on Ultra Signup, but that's not all. He's run AR50 in 2003. That was his first long event. He's run RDL, a 100-mile run, local here in Granite Bay, Western States Finisher two times, and Javelina Jundred 100-mile race that he's completed as well. Now, he has additional credentials as well. Street cred, if you will, because he has run 12 consecutive California International Marathons. Unofficially, James is a race director of the Sacramento Area Beer Mile. He's going to tell us a little bit about that in a moment. James also organizes, unofficially again, the AR50 and Way Too Cool training runs. And there are events that he hosts himself, and up to 150 people come out to get their miles in and get their mojo going on before the race. And that is something that he has taken on himself, which really demonstrates the kind of ultra runner and contributor that he is within the nation. He can be found at most race venues, either volunteering or with a bib on himself. And we'd like to welcome James Barstad to the show tonight. Thanks, James, for coming.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks, Don.
You know, we were just talking to James before we started the recording here, and we found out that we are trail brothers, not just by Trail Runner Nation, but as a matter of fact, Don's first 50-mile and James' first 50-mile were the same race.
Yeah, you know, James beat me by 10 minutes on that race, I've got a little bone to pick with him about that.
That's news to me. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? That's because I was behind you, James.
and similarly, both James and I ran Western States this year, and guess who won? Guess who beat
James,
the other?
James.
James beat me by, I think, about 20 or 30 minutes.
Well, there you go. He's good for 10 minutes for every 50 miles between you and I, Scott.
And I will tell you, because this is a podcast right before the Western States Lottery, just for you, all that you that are entered in the Western States Lottery, both James and I got in last year because we were at the lottery, and both were lucky recipients of getting in the lottery by the playing card method. So if you're listening to this, please stay home, because both James and I are also entered again this year, and we want the best chances that we can to get in.
What's the playing card method? What are you talking about, Scott?
Well, I don't know if I should tell people, because then they'll come.
James, it definitely does pay to show up if you're local. It paid for Scott and I last time. But they do save, I think, 5 or 6 spots for just the people in the room. And what they do is when you walk into the room, they hand you a playing card. They put your name on a playing card that they throw in the hat, and they hand you an identical card. And then they, at the end, they fill those few spots, those 5 or 6 spots, with names or playing cards that they pull out of the hat. I mean, they literally do pull those out of the hat, and they read the card, what it is. I think I was the 8 of diamonds.
And the exciting thing is there's more than one 8
yes.
of diamonds. So they say 8 of diamonds. There's like 3 people that go, yeah!
Yep, and then they read the name. And I was fortunate enough to have my name on that card.
Now, that was the question I was going to ask. You're 8 of diamonds. Scott, what were you?
9 of spades.
The lucky card, 9 of spades. Will you ever forget that?
Never.
Now, James, you had something else special about that day, as I remember, because your brother...
Yes.
I'll let you tell it.
my brother has been a runner for years and years and years, and of course he's had his time off and such, but he's come back to running in the last 3 years or so, And he's, of course, seen, you know, the ultras that I do, and I talk about them a lot. I'm quite excited about them. And he decided to give one a try himself. Well, his first try was Javelina 100.
Hmm.
His first ultra was a 100-mile race.
Wow.
Wow.
That comes into our discussion tonight. So hold that thought, James.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And he did quite well. But he, of course, qualified for Western States in doing so. So when I registered myself for the lottery, I happened to throw his name in there, too.
Without him knowing?
And didn't tell him.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I told him the morning of the lottery.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and it's a good thing because his name was chosen during the lottery.
I remember
that. Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes.
So both of you ran it?
Well, we both did. Unfortunately, we both didn't finish.
Oh.
You know, my eye was on you when I saw that your brother was chosen, and you seemed to be more excited that when he was chosen than you. Is that true?
Well, I was. Absolutely, I was. You know, I had run Western States one time before, so I felt if I didn't get in, you know, there's other hundreds out there I'd like to do. But, you know, for my brother, I knew it was going to be a special thing, and you know, he hasn't run on these trails out here that I love so much, and I really wanted him to have an opportunity to do so.
Go ahead.
The question is he registered for this year?
Yes, he is.
All right.
Yeah.
How did you break the news to him? So, I could imagine this phone call happening.
Well, I think he was at work. He lives in Phoenix,
uh-huh.
So, of course, he wasn't able to attend, but I think he was at work at the time, so I sent him a text and said, "You got in." He actually was quite excited. He was very excited about it.
Now, we were talking about the Beer Mile earlier, and you said that you hold two, one in the fall, one in the spring, and introducing a third.
Well, that's right. I've actually been doing these for about 4 years now, so I've hosted eight events. Yeah.
You know, for those of our listeners that don't know what a beer mile is, can you explain simply what a beer mile is?
Sure. Well, a beer mile is an event I love. It involves a couple of things I love, beer and running. It's an event held on a track where, well, typically it's held on a track where the participants drink a beer, run a lap, drink another beer, run a lap, drink a beer, run a lap, and four beers, four laps, and they're done.
Wow.
It's a fun event. I've participated in many of those that I've hosted, and I've actually won a few of them. I've found an event I can win.
Excel?
Yeah.
So do the winners, are they usually better beer drinkers or better runners?
Yeah, good question.
They're good at both.
Okay.
You know, I've had some real fast runners there who don't do that well. Usually that first lap, they do very, very well. But if it takes them 2 minutes to finish a beer, they're not going to be anywhere near the top in that race.
So, James, what do you suggest on training for this? I mean, do you do some speed work? Do you do some chugging? What do you do?
Well, you know, I never have specifically trained for it. You know, I just do my regular running, and I'm not a particularly fast guy in terms of speed on the track. You know, I do like to drink beer now and then. I typically don't drink them that fast, though, and I don't do anything special, so it just hopefully magically comes together the day of the race.
Now, what kind of beer do you use? Is it out of a glass? Is it, what is the...
No, we
Keystone.
there are actually official rules. There's a website out there called beermile.com, which they keep records on this. And these events are hosted all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. I happened to stumble upon it one time reading somebody's blog about it years ago, and I decided it'd be fun to do sometimes. So I organized one for a few of my friends, and, you know, the event's just grown over the few years that I've been hosting it.
That's awesome.
We need to figure out how us non-drinkers can participate.
Well,
I don't know if root beer would be...
I do those too. I've got a couple of sons who are not 21, and they, you know, of course, come out to help, you know, volunteer at the event and all that, but they've brought some of their friends out, so we do put together a root beer mile for those under 21 or those that don't drink beer.
There you go, Don. I'm throwing down the gauntlet, pal.
Hey, I got to tell you though, root beer is brutal.
Worse than beer.
Oh, very much so. Almost everybody that does the root beer throws up.
Oh.
With the beer, generally we may only have one or two participants actually lose it and not be able to hold it down.
Well, there you go. I guess beer's better for you than root beer.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Scientific study, right, James?
Yep.
Good.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there's a third event I'm going to add to the calendar this year, the The ones I do now, I do the regular beer mile, one in the spring, usually in May, and then I do one in October. It's a Halloween edition. People dress up. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All kinds of prizes and awards and things like that. But I'm going to add a third event. It's called a vertical beer mile. You know, it's for some of us that feel a little more at home out on the trails. It's going to be 1 mile. This will be a point-to-point race, so it's not on on a track. And it'll be 1 mile uphill. So I've got the climb in mind already.
K2?
K2, yep.
we know that. Yep. Oh, that's a rough, yeah. That's a rough one without a beer.
A mile up and about 1,000 feet up.
Yeah.
And they'll, you know, participants will start with a beer, and then they'll have a beer every quarter mile on the way up.
Now, did that come to you on a training run when you were out there?
Well, it did not. actually, I was reading a blog. Nick Clark, who's a very well-known and very talented ultra runner. I think he was third at Western States this year.
Yeah.
And maybe fourth the year before. I read on his blog. He and some of his friends actually did one of those in Colorado pretty recently. And I read that, and I said, I got to do that. So haven't picked a date yet. It'll probably be in the summertime.
Do you pick your own beer, or do you assign the beer? Is there, you know, I know we're hitting on this a long time, but this is important stuff, James. Important stuff.
Well, there is a list of approved beers on the website for it to be official.
Really?
Primarily, it just has to be 5% alcohol. Can't be any light beers. So there's a whole bunch of them that can be used. What I did this last time is I just bought a variety of different kinds for the participants to choose from.
Oh, good.
You know, that way they could hopefully use one that they liked. In years past, I just bought all the same kind, which some people liked and some people didn't. So I tried to cater to the crowd a little bit more this time.
You know, a spin that would be fun, although you'd have to have some lawyers involved and some liability waivers, is the vertical beer mile down.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. well, that happens when they have to walk back down anyway.
I guess that's the way back to their car, yeah, right?
After four beers.
I do have to say, though, I try to be quite responsible with the beer mile. All participants must have a designated driver present with them.
Oh, okay.
So otherwise, they're not allowed to participate. I don't want to have those people out there driving away afterwards.
Good. I think I prefaced it by saying this is the unofficial beer mile, right?
And it is unofficial. Correct. Yep. And the other thing that makes it very unofficial is, you know, the regular beer mile takes place on tracks. Well, these tracks are typically at schools.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the, you know, beer and schools typically don't go together. So it has to stay an unofficial event.
I believe I've read that sign. No alcohol, no dogs off leash.
No glass
like
bottles.
No beer miles, I think the bottom one said.
but I do say that, you know, when we do go out there and do that, we make sure we leave the place cleaner than when we found it.
Typical ultra runner fashion.
Yep, exactly.
You know, that fits right with our topic tonight, which is longevity, maintaining a base, and coming back from a layoff. I guess the longevity part being the beer mile, that's the tie-in. I'm stretching, guys. I'm stretching.
Yeah. It's only a mile.
I was trying to find the tie-in there. But, you know, I thought this would be a great topic, and one with James, who has great experience. 67 ultras under his belt that's officially listed.
You said 80 total?
Well, ultras, in ultras, probably 50. I know in ultra sign-up, there's other races on there, too, that aren't always ultras. There's 100 that apparently isn't listed on there. I did Burning River 100, too, out in Ohio last year.
Yeah. How did that go? Well.
It was a sub-24 finish.
So nice.
Good for you. Happy.
Good for you. Fantastic. So we were talking a little bit about distances, and what does it take to acclimate to the distance? So if a person is a 10K person, perhaps maybe they've done a marathon, when do you expect that you can safely venture in or jump into that 100-mile event? Because there needs to be a little bit of, you know, acclimation.
It does take time. I think sometimes runners want to, you know, the hundreds are kind of a glamorous thing right now. And you know, you look at the explosion of the 100-mile races out there and just the popularity of them. I mean, there's over 2,000 people registered for the Western States Lottery. I think over 2,000, I believe, or right at 2,000.
Right. And I think Hard Rock is right up there. I mean, the lottery was just yesterday or the day before, and a lot of people were disappointed.
Yeah. But you know, I do think that, you know, somebody who's got, you know, maybe a lot of, you know, short distance road races, maybe a marathon or two, with dreams of running 100 miles, you know, I would advise them to take a little time and get some experience, you know, at the 50K level and, you know, maybe a few 50 milers. Because every time you jump up in distance, it's a whole new experience.
You know, it's
a lot more challenges to face.
I one of my good friends said that it's almost exponential. Going from a marathon to a 50K is not twice as far. It's actually much, much further and much harder. And going from a 50 mile to a 100 mile is not just a doubling the distance. It's just a different, exponentially larger, tougher deal.
Absolutely. There's so many more challenges you're going to face. You know, challenges keeping your feet together and, you know, what you can eat, staying hydrated and fueled and, you know, dealing with all of those, you know, things that are going to happen, particularly in 100 miles. I mean, you're going to face all those bad things. And if you've not faced those before, it's going to be a tough time for you.
Not just on race day, but training up to it. Maybe that may be one of the biggest and most difficult components. It's not just the day of the race, but how many miles you have to put in to prepare yourself for that event.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to have a lot of time on your feet. You know, not just, you know, a few long runs like you can do for a marathon. You know, usually people building up to a marathon may do two or three or four 20-mile runs, maybe a 22, you know, and then jump into the marathon. I think if you're running 50 miles or longer, it takes a lot more time on your feet. I mean, you got to get out there and experience the bad things that are going to happen. Because if you don't experience them in training, they're going to knock you down in the race.
You
really
bet.
Knock you down.
You know, you were just telling us about your brother who ran his first 100-miler last year, and he had not run. That was his first ultra, right?
Yeah. Well, it goes against everything I just said.
Okay. Yeah. So my question to you is, you know, we're talking generalities that ideally you should start with a couple marathons and shorter distances, and then work your way up to a 50K, 50 mile, maybe throw in 100K there. But there are exceptions.
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, there are people that are just very talented. And I would put my brother in that category. He's a very talented runner. He was, you know, one of the faster kids when he was in high school. I think he might have got seventh at his state cross country meet or something like that.
Wow.
You know, he was a fast guy. He actually went to college on a running scholarship.
Okay.
Which is tough to do. There aren't a lot of those kind of scholarships out there. So he was quite talented. He got out of the sport for a lot of years. And came back into it only in the last few years. And initially, you know, just running a few little local road races. And I think he jumped in a couple of marathons. But, you know, during that time, of course, I'd been heavily into the ultras. And, you know, I talk about it quite a bit with him when I talk. Of course, we talk running because we're runners.
Sure.
And I talk about the, you know, experiences I have. And I'm very excited about it. Enjoy
so,
it.
So here's one of the questions.
Yeah.
When you're talking to your brother about the ultra distances, especially the 100K, 100 milers, do you forget to tell him about the dark side and the bad things that happen?
Well, I may bring them up, but you know, we don't dwell on that typically.
I think we all forget about them.
Yeah.
We were just talking about that.
I'd like to go back to the comments you made. Some people are gifted. And like to submit to you that it's not just speed that they're maybe gifted at, because you don't have to be fast to be a gifted runner. A gifted runner might be somebody that is biomechanically sound, that has the ability just to stay out there a long time, whether it's, you know, from their metabolic process that they have, good stomach, good, you know, good pancreas, good liver, all the things that work for you out there to keep you out there a long time, good biomechanical gait, so you're not putting a lot of stress on your feet and your knees and your hips and your lower back. That can be a gifted runner as well.
Oh,
and
I agree.
And be a mid-packer,
you know,
and still be gifted.
You know, I have to say, we had the pleasure a few days ago to meet Anton Krupicka. And if any of you have, I'm sure you probably have, gone onto YouTube and Google Anton Krupicka's name, and there's a video on YouTube that comes up of him running, and there's a side view of him running, and it just looks like he's floating. And we were talking to him about that, and we said, you know, is that natural, or did you learn how to do that? And he explained to us that, I think it was back in 2004, he decided he wanted to learn how to run better. And so he took off his shoes and started, you know, learning how to run better by barefoot running. And I thought that was very interesting, because I look at that video, and I just think, oh, he's just gifted, and he can run that way like a gazelle.
Right, and you know, I picture that same gait that I see, watch on that YouTube video, and I try to envision myself doing that and try to get into that groove that he has found there, because that's efficient.
Yeah, you know, you see some of those faster guys, and they do just seem to glide right over the rocks and the roots and all those things where I'm just kind of muddling my way through it.
Sure.
I'd like to be able to do that. I don't know about the whole barefoot thing for myself. My feet are pretty tender, and I like shoes a lot. So,
Let's get into that. Let's get into that. There have been rumors, and Don was talking to me earlier about this. Okay, James, how many pair of shoes do you have?
Well, right now I have probably 30 pairs of running shoes.
Oh my!
Are these old running shoes that you mow the lawn in, or are these running shoes you run in?
Yeah. I get rid of old shoes. I mean, I don't keep shoes around long because I got to get new ones in the rotation. Actually, of those 30, probably half of them don't have any miles on them. They're just waiting for a run.
I like that. That sounds good.
and I'm itching to get them out there on the trails too. I'd say probably three quarters of them are trail shoes and then just a few road shoes.
You're married, right, James?
Yes, I am.
Well, we've got to change this topic because
your wife just thought you only had 15 pair. Don't let her listen to this. I
don't tell her. You know, I just buy them and bring them in and then every once in a while I'm lacing up my shoes and she goes, I haven't seen those before.
Yeah.
I just cleaned them up, went
through the river in them.
Yeah. No, I do like my shoes and you know, I always think that there's going to be some magic shoe out there, you know, and whatever new one comes out, I got to try it.
There is a magic shoe, yeah. James. It's out there. Just keep looking.
I'm going to keep looking, yeah. And then there, of course, are those that, you know, that I do run into and really and like, and usually I'll buy a couple more pair before they're, you know, phased out.
Discontinued.
Exactly. So,
That's how I end up. Yeah, what's your go-to shoe?
Well, I've got a couple that I really like right now, but there's some I want to try. And I bought them and they're ready to go. But the ones that that I've been using this last year the most, I really like the Nike Pegasus line, both the road Pegasus and the trail Pegasus.
Mm-hmm.
Trail Pegasus is not a real popular one out there, but I really like the shoe. It's not a lot to it in terms of all the stability and all those kind of things. Just a nice cushioned shoe. I like the. Brooks Cascadias.
Uh-huh.
Had several
I've had a pair of those.
Yeah.
I've had a pair of those.
In fact, I like the most recent one the best. I know some people don't, but I really do.
That's the Scott Jurek designed one, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those are probably my go-to ones right now.
Okay, now which one is on your Christmas list?
Well, I don't know if I have any on my Christmas list right now.
You already went and bought them.
Yeah, what's in the box open?
They talk about the whole barefoot thing, and now there's so many of the shoes are going to a lower drop. You know, there's a zero drop and lower drop. Well, I don't think I can handle a zero drop. You know, I'm not into the barefoot thing, but there are some like the Saucony Peregrine, which is like a 4 millimeter drop. I bought a pair of those, and they're itching to get some miles on them. And I also got another pair of they're Saucony Mirage, I think. They're actually a road shoe. Uh-huh. And I actually ran CIM in them this time. And they're also like a 4 millimeter drop kind of shoe.
Hmm.
Trying to get used to a little bit of a lower drop. But, I think maybe those would be the magic ones. I don't know.
So back to the genetics of running. You mentioned, physical attributes or qualities. I think that I will be as bold to say that an ultra runner needs to be a stubborn SOB to be able to get through.
Well, I think there's a couple 100. Qualities. Stubborn is one of those, but I think maybe a little OCD too can help. I mean, to be able to do all that training and be out there all the time. You know, there's a little bit of OCD that I think has to be there. You know, I think I have it and. I mentioned my CIM. This was my 12th consecutive one, and I probably shouldn't have run it this year. But
we'll
I had a streak. Yeah, I had a streak that I had to maintain. So
right.
And the same thing with with keep running. You know, there was a time it got broken a few years ago, but I had a streak of no days off. I went about 5.5 years where I didn't take a day off of running. I ran a minimum of 3 miles every day. I think I averaged about 60 miles a week during that 5.5 year streak there.
Well, you know, the other thing is if you weren't born with that OCD or stubborn characteristic, you can learn it, can't you, Don, in the Marines?
Well, yeah, that they'll shove it down your throat.
I think that's where Don learned his stubbornness.
You know, another characteristic is just to be an optimist. You know, you need to be an optimist when things are bad out there on the run, training days. You don't see a negative person out there on the trail.
Yeah,
not
you know,
too many.
You know, that's true. My wife actually kids me a lot about. She calls me a half full kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I have. You know, those Life is Good shirts, you know, with the little sayings on them. And
absolutely.
I have one that actually has a picture of a glass, and it's half full and says half full. I like to wear that shirt a lot, you know, especially, you know, when things aren't so good. You know, if I'm not feeling good for a day or kind of down, I put that shirt on, and it keeps me a little more happy, a little more positive.
That's good. So, James, you've been running for many, many years now, even though you're still a young guy. We want to talk a little bit about running longevity. One of the things that drew me to this sport was the ability for older people that typically you don't see in marathons anymore that are out there running these ultra marathons. You know, you can see people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and sometimes in their 80s that are still running ultra marathons. How do you explain that?
Well, I think part of it is just good genes. I mean, you know, for some of the people, and there's a few, you know, local people that pop in my mind right now that are just incredibly talented runners still into their 60s or higher. Wayne Miles comes to mind.
Yes.
As one of them for those in the Sacramento area. You know, he's in his 60s. You know, he's survived some rough times and is still an amazing runner.
Dana Gard is another
one. Yeah, absolutely.
A mentor.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And we just saw that that movie Unbreakable, and Jeff Rose's favorite running partners are like in their 70s, and
wow,
they're running up in these mountains with Jeff.
What do you call them, the geezers? Or
wow,
at least that was referred to on the movie,
so.
The geezers.
Yeah, I do think the genes are part of it, but, you know, I think it's also more than that, too. Experience. You know, I think people with more experience behind them know how to deal with the tough things that can come up, you know, that might sideline those runners that don't have that experience, you know, haven't been through, you know, various injuries and things that can come up. You know, I think that definitely helps them.
I think there's a giant filter out there too. You know, we have all the runners out there that are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and those good genetics and those very positive people, the highly optimistic folks, are the ones we still see out there that have made it through the test and that we admire and look up to and look for advice and look for leadership from, really. You know, how are you out there? And they set the example for us.
Yeah, I agree. Yep.
You know, we talk about longevity in that subject, and we talk about how to maintain a base. You know, there's times that we go through our running career where life gets in the way, whether it's you know, business, personal, whether we need some time with family, that kind of takes us away from the trail, some of the things that we love.
Or injury.
Or injury. Any of these things can get in the way. What have you found, James, about maintaining a base? I know you've been lucky, always being able to stay out there, but in your experience, what do you see as far as maintaining a base?
Well, up until recently, I've really not had any kind of layoff. You know, I've had years and years and years of good, solid training, and certainly there's injuries that, you know, come and go during that time period. But for me, I feel like I'm at base when I'm doing about 50 miles a week,
mm-hmm.
45, probably at the lowest end of that. But if I can do, you know, right around there, then I feel like I'm at a place where I can launch, you know, a training, you know, when I focus on a race, you know, I've got a good base that I can build off of,
right.
To get to where I want to go.
How does your base look? You say it's 45, 50 miles. Is that every day, every other day? How many days a week are you running?
Well, it used to be every day. You know, I mentioned that streak I had.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, since I broke it a few years ago, I'm not quite so, you know, so obsessive about it. So typically it's about 6 days a week.
Okay. Yeah. So you take a day.
I try
rest.
To. There are weeks when I don't take a day off, but I've come to try to balance my life a little better, which is sometimes is a challenge, balancing your life.
Sure.
Running and work and family and all those kind of things. So I do try to take a day off every week.
And listen to your body a little bit.
So you've got your 50 miles a week in, and you've run several 100 miles. How long does it take you to then flip that 50-mile week base into a I'm ready to go for 100 mile and race it?
Well, I think I can do that in about 4 months.
Uh-huh.
With 50 miles a week, I've got a good solid base. Really, all I add to it, I lengthen out those weekend long runs. Mm-hmm. I try to find terrain that's suitable for the race I'm focusing on.
Right.
And lengthen out those long runs and keep the rest pretty much the same.
And how long are those long runs? Like, so when you're peaking out at the high mileage, how long are those long runs for, let's say, a 100-mile race?
Well, for a 100-mile race, a lot of those long runs end up being races. You know, there might be a 50-mile race or 100K or something like that. So oftentimes it's anywhere from 8 to 12 hours. Mm. So it's more a time than distance. You know, the terrain makes such a difference in terms of how far you're going to go during that time period. And, you know, I really look at how long it's going to take, or how much time I'm going to spend out there.
Yeah, pretty typical. We're finding, the ultra runners are not speaking miles, but more time out there on their feet, and even some elevation.
Yeah.
So they talk about, well, I did, 10,000 feet today. They talk more of elevation as a measure of their workouts.
Yeah, I don't really measure the elevation, but I look for it. For example, Western States, both times I ran that, I really spent a lot of time in the canyons. That's it's a place where a lot of us locals go, and that's a big significant factor during the race, and big ups and big downs, and that's what I look for. When I did Burning River or Javelina 100, that's not such a factor, and what I focused on then is long runs over rolling terrain where I had to work walk breaks in myself. Because when you're on the big climbs, those type of terrain
forces you to walk.
Yeah, it forces you to walk. I mean, you don't have to think about it. But Javelina, you can run every step of that course. Same thing with Burning River. I mean, there's really no place where you have to walk. So you have to make yourself walk. At least at my level, if I was one of the elite guys, I'm sure I could run it all. But I'm not. So I had to use my watch and look at time and decide what I wanted to do early on. What kind of run walk sequence I would use and try to stick with it. Now I usually don't stick with it early on, and then I pay the price later. But that's what I try to do in my training too.
One of the things that we wanted to talk about with you, James, is over a long career of running, inevitably, and you've been lucky to avoid this a lot of your career, but unavoidably, I think most runners end up with some injury that plagues them. And we talked a little bit earlier that ultra runners can endure a lot of pain, and they welcome that pain in many cases. And so sometimes they're not willing to give themselves the necessary rest that they need. What do you think about that?
Well, I agree, with the enduring the pain. In fact, I look at it oftentimes as kind of a badge of honor. The more I hurt, the better I feel about it.
Right.
I feel like, wow, I really earned that. And I did a good job earning that. That can be a little twisted sometimes. And I think especially, for non-runners, my wife doesn't understand that kind of mentality. But during that time period, I'm running every day, I had my share of injuries. I had my share of plantar fasciitis and, little things. I tend to have lower back problems. But during that time, I ran through all of that. In fact, I was fortunate, I guess, that none of those injuries at that time really sidelined me. I mean, sure, I had to take more 3-mile days, more of those short days.
Uh-huh.
It would force me to do things that I should have been doing anyway, like stretching and, core work, things like that that I didn't do and I always tell myself I need to do. You know, usually when those little nagging injuries pop up, that's when I would start doing it. But, you know, as soon as they go away, and I'd usually go back to my bad habits of not doing those things. But I do think that, you know, there's a danger, I think, you know, with runners like myself, you know, because and a lot of ultra runners are like me, I think, where we do try to push sometimes too hard through some injuries that aren't going to heal. You know, I know, you know, people get meniscus type tears and things like that. I've been fortunate not to have that. But, you know, there's things like that that, you know, probably you can't run through.
Well, and I think that it's important to know that if you have a good base and some kind of injury does plague you, it's okay to rest. You're not going to lose that base. Even if you take off, what, Don, two weeks, 3 weeks, you're not going to lose that base, correct?
You're not going to lose it. And I think most, you know, most runners will tell you, the people that even that aren't taking the layoff will tell their friend to take a layoff. You know, they know from experience that you're not going to lose your fitness in 2 to 3 weeks. You may lose your sanity, but you're not going to lose your fitness. You know, that's a completely different thing. But you have to have confidence in your body. You have to know that it's okay to take a few days off, that a few days off can make the difference of some good training ahead of you or just plodding through and maintaining that miserable, repetitive, cumulative stress-type injury. And you just have to rest it. Find something else to do.
You know, Julie Fingar told me one time that rest is good training. You need to let your body recover.
Yeah, I know that. I've always known that. I just didn't follow it. You know, it's like
reprimanding you? No, James, we weren't getting on your case, man.
You know, it's just like going into races. You know, I a lot of times I'll put together an elaborate race plan. You know, where I plan out I'm gonna, you know, run the, you know, to the first aid station in this time and the second aid station. And usually, you know, it involves going out slow and trying to run the second half faster. And then I throw it away. You know,
we all do.
Like 2 miles into it, I'm so far ahead of my race plan. I'm like, wow, this is gonna be a great day. And then, of course, you know, 3/4 of the race into it, you know, I realize what a big mistake I made.
Well, James, we appreciate you coming and sharing your story and talking about longevity and staying consistent.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks, Don.
Well, hey, thanks for joining Trail Runner Nation and listening to this podcast. We appreciate it. If you haven't already, go to trailrunnernation.com and join, learn, share, and run.